I see the red light. Go to the light. Go to the light.
That's what my children tell me. Go towards the light. They're not good children.
How are we, kids?
We're doing good. What do we got going on tonight, boys?
We got a show. That's what we got. We got a show.
And we got a guest.
We have a special guest tonight, and it's going to be fun. We have a little bit different evening plan than our normal What We Watch When We Drink podcast. So this will be fun.
Shall I roll the intro?
Roll the intro.
Yeah, I say roll the intro.
Let's get this show on the road. Welcome to What We Watch When We Drink, a Booze Dancing Entertainment Network podcast featuring lively discussions about movies, TV shows, and anything else that we're watching while we drink our favorite boozy beverages. If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com. And if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Hello, boys!
We seem so professional with that. So nice.
I know. It is very professional.
Semi-professional. That's our goal.
Semi-pros. We're not pros.
Slightly above amateurism. Just a hair. Just a hair, right?
I think we're striving for what, Aaron? Double A?
Yeah, if we get to double A, we're probably still riding buses, but that's okay. You know, maybe we have a little money to take a cab to the next game to, you know, in Raleigh, North Carolina, you know, Savannah, you know.
It's all good.
We may be semi-pros and semi-professionals, but you know, we are 100% immature.
Ooh, we've got that locked up.
Yes.
You should be getting paid for that.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Welcome, welcome, welcome all to the What We Watch When We Drink podcast, part of the Booze Dancing Entertainment Network, your unofficial podcast of record of the National Weather Service, because baby, baby, it is hot, hot, hot. You guys can tell me about the hot, right? It is hot.
Oh, yeah.
It's hot here in SoCal. I'm guessing it's hot on the East Coast. And Ange, Mike, how hot is it?
It's so hot.
We had a 30-minute thunderstorm that was right overhead. It brought the temperature down into the 70s, and an hour later, we were back into the 90s. So it did absolutely nothing to cool anything off.
Nope.
It made everything wet and sticky.
Yep. And it knocked out his power.
And
so
knocked the power off.
All right. So what's the story tonight? What do we got? We got a guest.
Our special guest tonight is coming to us from her parents' backyard in Northern California. She is an actress, a director, a producer, and casting agent, and is one of the hosts of the very popular Killer Casting Podcast. Let's welcome in Lisa Zambetti.
Hey, you guys.
Hello. Hello, Lisa.
Don't you love this Spielberg effect that I
do.
Said just for you?
It's very, very nice.
Golden hour here.
Very cool. Very cool.
How are the mosquitoes?
Oh, they're great. They're I'm just sure. great. I have to correct you, though. And by the way, I loved your intro. I am not only immature. What would you call yourself? Immature? Or
we would never do that.
I am unprofessional. I'm so unprofessional. I'm anti-professional. Like, I'm completely against being professional.
We strive for that, too.
Well, then you know what you are? You're right at home.
But one thing I did want to correct you about is it's like a pet peeve. It's a pet peeve with us casting directors. So there's no such thing as a casting agent. Like, there are agents and there are casting directors. I think once upon a time, a long, long time ago in Britain, they were called casting agents. But it's an important distinction because we kind of have to have that separation, so to speak, of an agent who represents the actors. And then the casting director really represents the producers. And so anyway.
No, this is good because we want to talk about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, because we are fascinated by the whole process, actually.
And more importantly, if you were looking for someone, say, between like 50 and 60, very average white men, where might you find them?
Hey, that's my bread and butter right there, buddy. You know, I cast a crime show, and that is right, you know, the population that we cast the most. But I would just look right to somebody just like you.
Willing to work for the catering table. I'm good.
Guy standing by the door number 3.
Exactly. Guy in the body bag. I'm good.
Number 1.
So funny how many people contacted me over the years saying, God, I would really love to play a dead body. How can I get on and play a dead body?
I've been told my driver's license makes me look like I was on Dateline. So, you know, if you are doing killer casting, I might be the guy.
Now, Lisa, you know what this crazy little podcast is. We told you about it a bit. And so what we like to do is we like to have a little something alcoholic while we're drinking. So we're going to go around the room and talk about what we're drinking tonight. And then we'll do a little cheers, and then we'll get rolling. So, Mikey, we'll start with you. We'll come back to Lisa on the end.
I was just on a cruise, and the booze is limited. So they had some Jameson and gingers. And I thought, since it's hot, my air hasn't fully cooled my house, I'm going with the Jameson and ginger.
Wait, did you just make a cocktail?
Well, I poured some soda into some Jameson.
More than one ingredient, it's a cocktail. Vodka tonic, that's a cocktail. I'm going Hollywood here. We got some Casamigos tequila.
Ooh.
I think this is the Reposado. So this is, you know, the great George Clooney. And who's the other guy?
Randy Gerber.
There you go. Cindy Crawford's husband?
Correct.
Right. So, yeah. So I have a little bit left. They were kind enough to send us samples a few years back, and not from George and Randy, but from their PR company, probably. But still, we could pretend, can't we?
6 degrees.
So from George to me to you.
And I made a cocktail too. You can't see it. There was ice in here, but it's so hot, the ice is gone. I have a Teeling's highball, Teeling's Irish whiskey highball.
Right? Very nice.
Because it's hot, 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 hot. Lisa?
Well, I am rounding out my evening with a nice cold Nigori sake, followed by a lemonade chaser.
So hey, that's
how I'm rolling.
Sounds good. We're
so perfect. Shall we?
We shall.
All right, folks.
Do we do a clink, cheers. Clink? Cheers. Thank you, Lisa.
Cheers.
Cheers. All right. Ange, maybe you can jump in and tell us how you got Lisa to come on the podcast.
Well, I started watching Mr. In Between on Hulu, and because I kept hearing about it. So I said, let me give it a try. So I got sucked in, and then I really started to enjoy it. So when I really like a show, I go deep. So I'm like looking for articles. I'm on the AV Club. I'm on Vulture. I'm on everywhere reading it. And then I'm like, well, let me look for a podcast. And I found Lisa's podcast. And she had a lot of the stars. They would do pretty much recaps of what, the last season, pretty much?
Right. Mm-hmm.
You were doing like pretty much every episode recap?
Every episode, yeah. We were deep in it.
You had the director on. You had the star and writer of the show. So I got sucked in. And it was really fun to hear, you know, the behind the scenes of everything and everything that went on to making the show. It was a really good show. It was low key awesome.
And then you contacted Lisa about coming on.
Yeah. So last week I was, what was it? Oh, my other obsession now is The Bear. So again, I got sucked into The Bear. I think I've watched it 3 times so far.
Wow.
And then I'm like, all right, let's see what's going on. And then you and your crew were talking about The Bear the whole season on your pod. So I got sucked into that. And I said, you know what? Let me email Lisa. So I emailed Lisa and you got back to me at about 3 minutes. I think your words were, you had me a booze.
Yeah, I really appreciate that.
So Lisa, how did this podcast start, Killer Casting?
Well, I, as your listeners may have heard, I'm a casting director. I cast the show Criminal Minds for 7 years, and I was on the casting team for a show called Reservation Dogs on Hulu, FX for Hulu, and I worked on just a ton of shows. And, you know, when you get excited about a show, you want to talk about it with somebody, and especially usually in my casting office, you know, you'd come in the morning, and your assistant or your associate or your you know, co-casting director, you would just be blah, blah, blah about what you just watched the night before and breaking it all down. But, you know, in the pandemic, we really didn't have offices anymore. I didn't have that kind of interaction. But what I did have was a friend in Australia named Dean who turned me on to Mr. In Between. And he's like, you know, just got to talk about this because he knows me from, I have another podcast that's in the real crime genre. So whenever there's a real crime scripted show like The Staircase or, you know, whatever, we break it down on my other podcast because it's about real crime. But, you know, this is my chance to talk about things that are completely fictional that are still kind of dark and twisty. I mean, The Bear is a, you know, goes dark and so does Mr. In Between.
Oh,
it's really, it goes there. And I love that. And so I love talking about not only the casting, you know, the actors and the directors, but I'm really big into the production value. I love noticing what the wallpaper is in a scene. I love noticing what the particular blouse, like if you watch any David Fincher series or movie, those things are really important. You know, there's a lot of thought that goes into the color of paint on the wall and the color or the pattern. Sorry, my dog, or the pattern of a dress. It's really, Stop. I have a big puppy, but anyway. So we just jumped on and we just started talking about casting and anything that really lights us up. And this is my first year being eligible. I'm a member of the Television Academy, and this is my first year that I can vote for Emmys. So it's been really exciting to go through that process and to go through the nominating, what's going to be nominated before it's nominated process. So
when you thought about putting the podcast together, were you thinking, we just want to talk about TV and some interesting shows? Or were you thinking about it from a professional point of view, where how do these shows work? How do they get put together from a cast point of view?
Well, it comes from me watching something and seeing something really exceptional, seeing something that, oh my gosh, the common viewer may not understand how incredible, what a feat it is. I mean, if you talk about Mr. In Between, and we talked about it on my podcast, the way that the shots are set up and the way that the characters are set up, it's very different than a normal, you know, quote unquote network show. And that's intentional. You know, as you know, Scott Ryan, who created Mr. In Between, you know, he had many opportunities to take it to American TV, you know, and try it in a different format. And he didn't want to do that. He wanted to be very gritty. And so that's what I love getting into, is pointing out, oh, did you notice that moment or that acting choice or that shot or that particular piece of music or, you know, any number of little things that catch my eye. And the great thing about Dean, my co-host, is he notices completely different things, and he does deep, deep research into how a production came to be or who was going to be cast but who fell out, or, you know, any number of those things.
How long have you been a casting director?
Probably about 10 years have I really, you know, had my career going.
That you watch TV differently now than you did before?
Oh my gosh, yes. What I really notice are actors who I've cast before who were like, I gave them maybe their first job, like a little barista or a little, you know,
barista nurse number one.
Or a nurse in emergency room. And now they're career has just like cascaded forward, and I get so excited about that, you know. So I definitely am always noticing, oh yeah, I already cast that person a long time ago, and you know, now they're a big deal. And then I look at it from a point of view, is who is the, oh, I noticed somebody brand new, like I've never seen that person before, where did they come from? You know, that's also something that has changed since I've gotten into the business.
So you're probably taking notes and, hey, I should keep that person in a file and you think about them for a future event. Yeah.
Especially when I'm watching independent film or, you know, short film, or, you know, a lot of times those people may or may not have, you know, huge representation. I may not have come across them before. So I'm always looking for that. But I'm also the kind of person, I don't know if you guys like going to jury duty, but I love jury duty. It's like my favorite thing to do, because I love sitting there and watching people, fucking weirdos and crazy, you know, personalities.
Slice of life.
You know, yeah, absolutely. I like looking at what a real judge looks like and how she runs her courtroom, and the plaintiffs and all the other crazy ass people on the jury with you. I mean, I just soak all that stuff in. So I tend to not just watch television differently, but I kind of watch just human interactions much more differently now than I did.
Neat. So with the casting, I mean, are you guys independent, or you work with a studio? I mean, like you're like the casting agency, and then they, you know, they come to you.
Yeah, every television show that you see, you know, streaming or otherwise, that's cast by an independent casting director.
Okay.
And the studio hires you, and yeah. So there aren't really, it used to be that there would be internal casting directors back in the old days when there were just
the studio systems or whatever.
But now we're just, you know, we're jobbed, you know, on this, and if this show ends, our job ends, and if a show continues for years and years, then your job continues for years and years. Uh-huh. So in some ways it is like being an actor too, you know, we're constantly trying to hustle and get our next thing, just like an actor is.
Well, but I guess the good thing with you though is at least you could say, well, look, I cast that show and look how well that did.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
I found this diamond in the rough and look at it now.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned Reservation Dogs. Were you in it from the, were, was, it's your company or?
No. So I worked on the pilot. Okay. I was brought onto the casting team. It was kind of it was a really unusual situation because they hired a casting director out of
Oklahoma.
No, actually out of New Mexico.
Oh, okay.
And this casting director, wonderful woman, Angelique Minthunder, she knew the creator very well. She had cast some of his indie movies.
Sterling Hardwell, so really, was that his name?
With Sterling, yeah. Sterling. And so, you know, he really wanted her to be his casting director, and that was awesome that he went to bat for her. And then she was looking for somebody in LA because this is pre-pandemic, you know, thinking that we would have a lot of sessions in LA and stuff like that. And so I was completely excited to join the team and kind of help her from LA. But it turned out that she needed somebody to go with her to Oklahoma to do the search because it was really important to Sterling to find authentic kids. So I flew into Oklahoma City and met her, and we rented a big truck and drove everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, we went to the biggest cities, which of course Oklahoma City and Tulsa, but then we went way, way, way out in the middle of beautiful nowhere and met people closer to where they live because, you know, I mean, there's a lot of the indigenous community in Oklahoma, you know, live below the poverty line, and they can't just get in a car, leave work in the middle of the day, and take their kid to an audition, you know. And we really had to think about bringing the audition to them. And in fact, we went to, there are indigenous boarding schools out there. There's all kinds of places where we really wanted to find. And we found just tons and tons of super interesting, amazing performers. And one of them got cast as a series regular. And that's just a huge, huge thing because we had not only gone to Oklahoma, but we'd gone all around the United States looking for indigenous actors.
Which one was the local?
Lane Factor, who plays, oh my gosh, now I'm going to forget which one he plays. If he plays Cheese or...
Oh, Cheese is funny.
He was just this kind of awkward, shy kid who came into this conference room in Oklahoma City, and we just thought he was so sweet, and there was just something about him. And so we kept calling him back and calling him back, and then flying him and a handful of other people to LA to test. I mean, it's a real process. The pilot process, right, is because you really have to keep vetting and vetting and vetting, especially somebody who's never, he's never done anything, you That's know, crazy. So And it's great that FX supported that, you know, supported, because there were certainly other indigenous actors who've been around and maybe have done a few series under their belts. But, you know, here they were really open to, I mean, and even the other leads, you know, the two other leads came from Canada where they had a lot more experience, but they didn't have American television experience. Mm-hmm. We found so many talented kids that even in the pilot, we knew that, okay, there's no role for you in the pilot, but we would use them in some capacity, you know, throughout the season. So that was really, really cool too.
Yeah, that is a really fantastic show.
So how does that happen? You did the pilot. So mm-hmm. What about the rest of the series? How does it, why did you not do the rest of the series?
Well, so what happened is we cast the pilot and then the pandemic hit and shut down everything shut down. So it didn't even get shot. Yeah, it didn't even start. So then, you know, a year later when they're ready to actually shoot it, everything now is on tape. I mean, you don't even really need, like, I don't even really need an assistant anymore because I do everything on tape. I don't have an office. I don't have a gatekeeper, you know, they didn't need an LA casting director because there wouldn't be any LA producer sessions. Just everything is on tape. So it wasn't, you know, wasn't necessary for her team. Even the other people on her team didn't continue with Angelique. But anyway, but it was a great, great experience.
It's interesting how the your industry has changed also from in the last few years. That's weird.
Yeah, very much so. But in a way, it's kind of cool. I mean, you guys aren't actors, so you don't kind of know the grind.
You could be.
It's not too late. But, you know,
we got to face the podcast, Aaron. Face the podcast.
That's about it.
Radio. I mean, you know that if an actor has an audition and they live on the West Side, but they've got to be at CBS at 4:30 on a Friday. I mean, that's
God bless
a real,
them.
Yeah. And they have to get childcare and they have to get, you know, get out of their job or whatever's going on. You know, at least now with live Zoom auditions or self-taping, you know, they don't have to do that. They can just stay in their stage. It's just like this. I mean, the auditions are exactly like we are right now. Wow. So in some ways it's good.
So let's talk about your podcast again. So you guys just kind of do like what we're doing, or you're not in the same room because one of your co-hosts is in Australia, right? So you guys are just doing a Zoom kind of thing as well.
That's what we do. That's what we do. Yeah.
How do you guys pick a topic, pick a show? Is it just kind of rambling around together? Hey, let's do The Bear. Is it really, hey, I saw the show.
It is absolutely from our gut. I mean, organic. You wouldn't do a podcast unless you were passionate about what you were talking about. You know, there's no point.
Yeah.
So when I see something, it's like, I have to talk about this, or, you know, I have access to somebody who worked on the show, or, you know, something like that, that I can talk it over with. Like we're going to talk about Ozark, and a friend of mine that I cast on Criminal Minds, she was in Ozark. So I really want to bring her on and talk about that series ending and, you know, what she thought about it. So it just depends on who I have access to, what I'm watching, and some things Dean can't get yet in Australia. So we kind of have to sometimes, you know, figure that out.
He was talking about The Bear, wasn't it? When he said he was like using a, like some weird way of listening, watching it. So, he said it on the podcast.
No, it's okay. He has his ways of getting things that I don't ask questions. He all of a sudden he's like, okay, I'm up. I watched it. And I'm like, okay, great.
Oh, good.
What's that's the time great. Difference? Time zone difference between LA and Australia.
Let's see. It's always on my clock. So right now it is 11:30 a.m. Friday. So it's tomorrow right now in Melbourne, Australia. Wow. And, you know, right now for me, it's 6:30 p.m. Wow. So we really tend to, right when I'm getting ready to go to sleep, he's kind of like, okay, what are we doing? Yeah.
I actually listened to it twice, the Bear podcast, because of all the detail in the show, and you guys really talked about the detail within the show to the nth degree. It was so great. And that the Chicago angle of it, from that one, your one co-host.
From Brian. Yeah, so
oh
Brian.
Oh my God, he's just incredibly knowledgeable.
Yeah.
And Brian, restaurants.
Yeah. So Brian was an actor. Thank you. And he was an actor, and then he went into casting. He was actually, I brought him on as my assistant when he moved to LA. So he was in casting for a long time too, but he just left the business to go to Chicago. And so when I was watching this show, I'm like, holy fuck. Can we say fuck?
Sure.
Like, Brian is going to love this show. And sure enough, he was already watching it. So I knew that, you know, but our background in the restaurant business, our background in acting, and his love of Chicago, I knew that it would be just a perfect show to do. So
Angelo and I were talking about The Bear recently.
Cousin!
I love it.
And there's a show that I recommended to Angelo on Hulu called Shorzy, which is this Canadian production on Crave TV. And it's a spinoff of another show called Letterkenny, which has been on for like 10 years. And Shorzy's in almost a different world than Letterkenny, but it's about hockey. And one of the things that impressed me, being a sports nerd, is that the hockey stuff, the hockey scenes, the hockey playing was really great. It wasn't like when you're watching something from the 70s and it's pieced together and it doesn't look like they're real athletes and it's doesn't really, and
Slapshot?
It's supposed to
be. Are you talking about Slapshot?
Slapshot. Yeah, that's a good point. Well, they had real athletes in it, Slapshot. But it was, it felt like this. They really took the time and effort to A, cast the right people, and to get those scenes right for the nerdy people like me who really love hockey and want to make sure that those guys are doing the right thing. I said to Ange that I think The Bear is similar to that for restaurant work. Now, I've never worked in a restaurant. I have no idea. I listen to Dave Chang's podcast. That's the only thing I know about restaurants. It seems like that is a more realistic look at restaurants. And you said you worked in restaurants, right? And
it's mayhem.
But there's a rhythm to it. There's a pattern. Right. There's rules. Right. And you have to follow that. And it seems like those guys, and from all the articles I've read, just like you, Ange, they really took the time and effort to figure out how to make it look right and be right.
Yeah, and there's a palpable energy to when you're working in a restaurant. There's like a buzz that starts happening.
Right.
And we call it getting into the weeds. I don't know if you've heard that
term,
being in the weeds. I mean, I don't know where that term came from, but you know it when you're in it. You're like, there's so many things that I have to do right now, and there's only one of me, and blah, blah, blah. You start getting into like a panic. I found myself just getting right back into that mindset, watching the bear. I mean, because there is that tick down to when we open and when the rush is, and oh, there's a party of 18 coming in. Oh my God, you know. So I was just right back in it, watching the bear, which is fantastic that they captured that. And they went, you know, behind the scenes, the production cared enough about that, those details, to send, you know, Jeremy Allen White to work in a restaurant and to give them all of the training, you know, all of the submerging them in the world, which is so important.
It looked pretty good to me. It didn't look like they did a lot of cutting or cutaways. Maybe for some of the close work, like some of the knife work, maybe they just did, you know, the hands. But in general, like you see him like working in the pans and, you know, he's making the chicken piccata or the veal piccata, whatever it was. I mean, look good. Mm-hmm.
But the ballet that's going on in a very small space, that must be hard to film, of course, as well, in such a small space. It's just, you know, I felt like I was in the heat of that kitchen for eight episodes.
We're in the weeds.
But I love watching things about when people are really good at something and the production shows you why they're good at something. And it really, you know, for people who haven't been in the restaurant business, you really get a sense of the precision and the family nature. And like you said, you know, that you are skin to skin with people, you know, brushing around each other, trying to get what you need to get, you know. It was just so great.
I'm remembering when the guy backs into the knife and the guy from Mogadishu? And he's talking about like, oh, I've stitched a man asshole before.
That's a really interesting cast too. You've got, I don't know what their acting backgrounds are. I almost got the sense they didn't have a lot of acting background.
Oh no. They are all long-time
actors.
Yeah. I mean, Jeremy Allen White, I think, as I mentioned on the podcast,
him.
Almost for like 10 years. Even
Shameless, right?
Yeah, Moss Bachrach was on Girls, and he's been on, The Punisher, The Preacher. I can't remember what it is, but Oliver. No, they all have thick resumes for sure. But that's what's great is that they aren't people who you have baggage with necessarily.
Right.
You know, they aren't so shiny and fancy. I mean, really, probably the most famous person in the show is John Bernthal, who comes in at the very end as
he was fantastic.
Mike the brother, and he was so great, and they only had him for one day, you know. Right. And
I think Molly Ringwald's a little bit bigger than him.
Oh yes. Those are great little Easter eggs in there too.
Not in 2022. Bernthal's killing it this year.
I know.
He is killing it this year.
He's the man. Absolutely. Although the zombie American stuff got him going.
Yeah, I was just listening to, he was on a podcast I was listening to today. I don't know if you listen to Rob Lowe's Literally. It's a great, great show. And he was on, and I had no idea about his background training. He lived in Russia and trained, you know, in Russian theater. And so he's just a really, really interesting guy.
He's from D.C., right?
I think that his family moved around a lot or something like that. I can't remember.
Did you see We Own the City?
No, I haven't watched that yet.
He was unbelievable. He was really, I mean, everybody, it was really good, but he was in particular, he was just a testosterone beast in the whole show. He was incredible. He was really, really good.
Well, before we go to our next segment, we're going to play a little game, and Lisa may not want to play this game, but we'll offer it to her.
Okay.
Because she has, you know, a career she has to, you know, be concerned about. This is called Cast, Marry, Kill.
Oh.
Okay, here we go. And boys, you can play too.
Thanks.
Brad Pitt, Johnny Depp, George Clooney. Who are you going to cast? Who are you going to marry? Who You're going to kill.
I think I have to bow out of this
I think you should probably bow. You might work with these people again. Have you worked with any of these guys?
No, not that I'm aware of. No. Mm-mm.
And?
Not yet.
Kill Johnny Depp. Definitely.
I think that's an obvious one.
Cast Brad Pitt, marry Clooney, because he's got $1 billion of Casamigos money.
I think that's probably the right answer. Yeah, I think that's the right answer. That's right.
And don't forget, Lake Como.
Yes.
That's right. That's right. Yes.
Don't forget.
Good point. All right. Very good, guys. So why don't we move on to our next drink? I know, Lisa, you are on to more lemonade, I think.
Yes, I think I'm on to lemonade, yes.
Gentlemen, what do we have next?
Well, I kicked the Casamigos.
Still working on my Jameson and Ginger.
Oh, you guys are such wimps.
No. I'm on drink number three, boys.
Three?
Well, I had two Casamigos, and now I'm going on to High West Double Rye.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's a good one.
That is a good one.
I have a 5-year-old Bowmore from the Douglas Lang Old Particular series.
Yeah,
and
okay.
It is from K&L.
Just like you.
K&L.
You're Old Particular.
Exactly. I am. And this was a
that's peculiar.
Whiskey with a six.
Peculiar, not particular. Peculiar. Whiskey with a six. Very nice.
Whiskey with a six. Hold on. Wait for it.
There you go.
Ooh, that six, sounds good.
61%. ABD.
Now, Lisa, are you a spirits drinker or no?
I like tequila. I mean, I like tequila drinks.
Okay.
But no, I don't think I could keep up with you guys.
That's okay. You could stay. What do we call it? We are
equal opportunity enablers.
We are booze agnostic. We don't care what you drink as long as you drink.
Exactly. That's right. That's right.
As long as you're willing to drink, you don't have to drink.
Exactly.
You
don't have to drink.
No.
Exactly. Teetotaler is not welcome.
One of the topics we talked about bringing up, and this is good because Lisa is now a voting member, we talked about the Emmys coming up. I'm not sure when they are.
They're in September.
September? Oh, that's right. Yep.
September 24th, I think, or 22nd.
So we thought we'd go run through some of the categories and talk about who's up and what we thought about certain shows and what we might pick as the winner of those categories.
Can I ask about the process?
Yeah, I was going to ask the same thing. Go ahead.
The process is... In order to be nominated, you have to be submitted. So that means that the producer of your show has to submit you. So it's not like I can say, my favorite show is Flatbush Misdemeanors. I want to nominate that. You know, it has to come from the production. So that was the first thing that I don't know why that just never occurred to me anymore. So, you know, when you say, somebody was snubbed or somebody didn't get this, you know, were they even submitted? That's the first question. And, you know, there's a fee to submit it. It's not that much. It's not like a huge barrier for entry, but, you know, there is a fee and somebody, it's not like an actor can really nominate themselves. So it starts out that, you know, everybody submits who they want to submit. And then those huge lists go out to all of the membership for us to nominate, for us to vote on who will then be the nominees. So, you know, some categories just had tons and tons of actors or actresses or shows.
How many can you nominate? Can you nominate with 5, 10?
You can vote for as many as you want.
Oh, so it's like if they give you a list of 100, you can give them back 15?
Can give them back 100.
Wow. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, in a certain category. It's not like, okay, here are, you know, 20 nominees for best drama. You can only vote for 5. No,
you can vote for
as many as you want. And then then the next round are the actual nominees. Sometimes almost everything under the sun can be there in a certain category. And then other times it's like, there aren't that many people nominated in this category, and you kind of go, "Why? I wonder why."
So then they just tally the votes and they pick the top 7, top 8, whatever.
Yeah. So there's some kind of formula where if in a category, like there's a lot of submissions, then at the end of the day, there will be more nominees. So instead of 5 nominees, there might be 7 nominees.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that. They can't just be 5.
I don't think so. I was rereading the rules before coming on here. And so, but anyway, there's a certain formula for what the threshold is for how many nominees there actually will be.
Okay. And then you get to vote on the final as well.
Yep.
So it's up to you to do your own research, or do they send screeners, or how does that work?
Yeah, they will send you, you know, they'll send you screener links usually so that you can watch it.
In some cases, you're being nominated for an episode of a thing, right? Like the late night category is all like episodes.
Right.
And then, but otherwise it's a whole series. So you're not going to necessarily watch a whole series.
Right. I mean, it's just so funny when I hear people talk about, oh, they nominated this or they are voting this way. They're really, the they is like, we're not all in the same room. You know, right. We're not having like a conference where we say, okay, this is why this deserves that. I mean, it's a very personal thing. And I found myself, you know, looking at the nominees to be nominated. And there are a lot of shows that like a lot of people like, but like, I'm not on that bandwagon, you know, and I feel like it feels so freeing to be able to vote your heart, you know, and vote your aesthetic. And then there are some, you know, very more obscure shows that I was so happy to throw love to.
Are there lots of shows you have never heard of?
Not a lot of shows I'd never heard of, but shows that I hadn't gotten around to watching. So I tried to be very honest about, you know, I'm not just going to click on something just because it's popular, right? I want to make sure that I've seen it before I vote for it.
So with this, like with the Academy Awards, right? Like the cinematographers nominate the cinematographers, the actors nominate the actors. Everybody votes for Best Picture, right?
I believe so. That's a different academy, so I don't know about
that. No, but I'm saying that's how the Oscars work. But with the Emmys, you're given all the nominations.
Well, I think in my category, I'm not voting for the production values. I don't think that.
You don't do the technical stuff.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
Okay, no, I just didn't know. Like if you were broken up by, you know, your specialty or whatever.
And this was the first year that none of the major, what used to be the major networks, got nominated. So when you were going through the nominations, were you conscious of that? Or did you just pick shows you really liked and it didn't matter who was producing them? It was just a matter of, this is what I watch and I really like it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even clock that so much. I mean, Abbott Elementary is an ABC show, but yeah, you're right. Most of them are on the streaming services or on, I mean, I see some other cable outlets too. So yeah, that's been a big change, you know, it's an interesting turn of events, but you know, a lot of the streamers are owned by the networks.
Right.
So
they're still getting their piece. Yeah.
They are connected. Yep. Yeah.
I almost considered putting our list together for all of us to look at without the network or service they were from, because it almost doesn't matter anymore. We don't think it's not three networks anymore, four networks. It's all these places where you just get TV.
It doesn't matter to us. It does matter to them.
Yeah.
Oh,
they are definitely keeping score of how many nominations HBO Max got and how many Apple got and stuff like that.
Wall Street wants to know that stuff. Yes. Yeah. So the drama, we'll start with the drama series. That's the big one in some ways. We got Better Call Saul, Euphoria, Ozark, Severance, Squid Game, Stranger Things, Succession, Yellow Jackets. I have seen all of them except Euphoria and Yellow Jackets. How about you guys?
Yeah, the only ones I didn't see, well, there's four of them I didn't see. I didn't see Severance. I saw parts of it. I saw parts of Squid Game. I didn't watch Stranger Things, and I didn't watch Yellow Jackets. So it's a tough call. This is definitely a tough category.
So I've seen all of them, with the exception of Better Call Saul, though I did watch Breaking Bad, and I'm sure that it's a fantastic show. So I can't really comment very much on Better Call Saul, but I would say just in the choices we have here, there's so many good choices and there's so many great reasons. But for me, like, I would have to ask, what is really doing something that is so unique and gutsy and dangerous in some ways? And for me, that would have to go to Severance. Because it is such a different kind of mind-boggling show. It's so demanding of the characters, and just the direction is incredible. Although there's amazing direction in Euphoria too. I mean, just technically in Euphoria, I just can't believe some of the shots that they get. But for me, Severance is just such an odd duck, and I love weird, odd ducks. So
it is definitely that.
Yeah.
Mike?
I haven't seen Severance or Squid Game or Yellow Jackets, but I've seen it. And Stranger Things is, I've got children, so they love that show. They just,
sure.
Every episode that drops, we got to watch it. And I find that the older members of the cast, I enjoy more than the younger members of the cast. My children may be the opposite. I'm not really sure.
Right.
I think you made an interesting point, Lisa. You can look at these lists in a lot of ways and how you're going to vote. Whatever, it's like most valuable player in a sport. Mm-hmm. Is he the most important player or the most valuable player? Is he the best player of the year or the most interesting player of the year? And I think you make a very good distinction. I think I would agree with you as the most interesting show. I would agree. I think it's Severance. I think I'd probably choose Succession as the best show. For lots of reasons, the cast is amazing,
and the lead's just unbelievable,
and the content is kind of reflects what we're going through in the real world today. It's really interesting. But Severance, I agree with you; it is out there. And if it's a vote for the best out there show, that one. And I think you could argue Squid Game has that nuance to it as well. It's not for the ever seen either, right? That's like a reality show.
Yeah,
show.
Some of my Korean friends are like, this is not a new kind of show. Like, this is like, you know, they've seen other iterations of it. But, and the thing about Severance is that it's such a metaphor. I mean, I hate to say this for people who haven't watched it, because there's nothing more boring than hearing somebody talk about a show you've never seen. But just the metaphor of the show of, we've all had these fucking soul-sucking day jobs, right? You know, where you're just waiting for your life to begin after.
When you walk out the door. Yep.
And that's when your life. And so the idea that I could completely sever that from my consciousness, like I will never have to experience that part of my life, and I'm only in the fun part of my life. I think that's just such an interesting idea.
We all say we don't want to take our work home. They never do.
Yeah, exactly. Or just being cut off from that emotional. I mean, some places where you work are super toxic and are belittling places, but you can't leave because you have insurance there or something. And so this idea that, you know, your waking life wouldn't have to experience that, and your work life wouldn't have to remember my horrible relationship with my wife or my sick child, you know, when I'm like, you could just divorce yourself, compartmentalize your life. I mean, I just think it's such an interesting existential question that a lot of us are going through, you know?
You know what I think is interesting about Severance? Let's say it wins. And I think we were this way last year with Ted Lasso. It's put together by a computer company, Apple. Who would have ever thought that, you know, a computer, the largest company in the world, would be like winning Emmys for their television productions. It's crazy.
I know. Well, who would ever think that something like Netflix, a provider of DVDs would ever get into the production company? That was such a wild idea, you know, when they did that for the first time. Crazy.
Ange, what do you think?
It's a tough call. I mean, like the shows that I watched, I watched a little bit of Severance, and you know what? I liked everything about it. I liked the music. I liked the production design. I like the cast. But for whatever reason, it just didn't suck me in. Like, I like everybody, but I need to go back to it. I really do. I mean, you got Christopher Walken. You've got John Turturro.
That's the thing. Yeah. Who knew that I wanted a romance between Christopher Walken and John Turturro? I mean, what kind of fucked up, crazy, wonderful mind did that come out of? I wanted to interview Rachel Tenner, who did the casting for that show, and get into how that all came about.
And Adam Scott's grown on me over the years. Yeah. At first, it was but he's really good. He is really, really good. It's a great cast. I love all the elements of it. I should like it, but I'll go back to it.
Subjective. I mean,
I'll have to go back to it.
What are you picking? You're picking Better Call Saul or Succession. I know you.
Yeah, it's between those two, but I think it's going to be Succession, only because I haven't seen how Better Call Saul finishes up. And Succession, though.
But this is for last season, though.
No, I know, the first half. And it was great. It was really, really good. But Succession, the beauty of Succession this year was all the cameos, which usually I would have thought would have been a distraction. It didn't work. They worked really, really well. I didn't care for Adrian Brody before Succession. Then I watch him in that, and then I watch him in Winning Time, and he was fantastic. I'm like, all right, what am I missing? Now I got to go back and watch all his other stuff. Same thing with, who was the other guy? Skarsgård was great.
He's good.
You know, and then the cast is just fantastic. for me, it's Succession, because it was just a really, really good season. And the way they ended it in Italy, you know, with his confession, and it was just tremendous.
Oh, that last episode.
It was spectacular. The last two, three episodes in Italy, they were just tremendous. So Succession for me.
All right. Comedy series, Abbott Elementary, Barry, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Hacks, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Only Murders in the Building, Ted Lasso, and What We Do in the Shadows. That seems like a lot of names. Is that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8? Wow.
Yep.
I think it's 8.
Well, like I said, it could vary, right?
Yep. Let's start with you this time, Ange. What do you think?
You know,
I think it's a tough one, too.
No. This one I think is an easy one. Because now that I just saw it and I binged the whole series, Barry, all the way.
Barry, yeah.
It's pretty damn good.
Barry was, I was sucked in. I was like, my wife's like, can we do one more? I'm like, no, we got to go back. No, one more. We got it. So I knocked it out in like a week and a half. Barry was tremendous.
I have to agree, even though I don't know if it really is a comedy, but.
No, but there's funny elements.
Right. There definitely are. But what I loved about it, I was noticing this the last couple episodes I saw, that even when something tremendously violent and horrible happens,
right,
there will be some kind of comic punctuation
to temperate. Yeah,
very hard to pull off.
Everybody was so, and that's another one with a stacked cast. Hader's great. Stephen Root, tremendous.
Underappreciated Stephen Root.
Stephen Root is like,
yeah, he can do anything.
You know what Stephen Root's like? Who was the pitcher for the Yankees? The closer.
Mariano Rivera.
He's like Mariano Rivera. He is
He's different. Mariano Rivera, you knew exactly what he was going to throw every time he went out.
Where
Stephen Root, you don't know what he's going to throw every time he goes out. He blends into the scenery. He's so good.
Yeah, but the point is he comes in there and he delivers.
He delivers.
The guy's back fantastic.
To news radio.
And
lastly, Henry Winkler is just tremendous.
Yeah, Henry Winkler.
You know, there's this whole generation of people that have no idea that he was the Fonz.
That he was a sex symbol. That he was like a dolls were made of him. You know?
Lunchboxes. People took him to school.
He was on every magazine in the world. Uh-huh. Yeah. There's a whole meme about him jumping the shark.
Actually, talking about jumping the shark refers to him.
Him, right. Yes. It's really crazy. It's and there's a whole billions of people that have no idea what that's about.
No idea.
None. And and he's taken it with such grace, this newfound stardom in he's what, seven? Is he? I'm guessing he's 70-ish. I think
close to 70. Yeah.
He's just a treasure for America, I think.
But he was always behind the scenes, though, right? Producing, directing. Doing all that stuff. So it's not like he was out of the game. He was
this is probably his third act, you know, and he's making the rest of it. Yeah. You know?
Right.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Great.
Lisa, what do you think about the list?
I mean, I have to agree that Barry, and especially the thing about Henry is that he gets to have a love interest. I mean, he's been working he's been working forever and, you know, has had a great career, but you don't have that many opportunities to have that kind of pathos, to not only have a love interest, but then have her murdered and all of that emotion that he had to go through. I mean, it's just such a brilliantly written role. But yeah, and I think Bill Hader, I mean, he's just such a revelation to me because he's just the nuances that he brings, the layers to his character and his stamina in some of these episodes, you know, where he's just in every scene, and every scene has got such huge conflict and such huge emotions and so much going on. I mean, I loved it. But somebody who actually was snubbed, I think, is Sarah Goldberg, who plays his girlfriend, who had just a stunning, stunning season. I mean, some of her monologues and her emotional arcs were tremendous and were not funny whatsoever.
It is interesting how the comedy category, it blends into dramedy because that's the way TV is now, right? You don't see a lot of two camera sitcoms anymore. I guess you do on network TV a little bit, but it's just, and those aren't that, they're not to this level of quality. I mean, all of these you could argue have maybe not What We Do in the Shadows, but all of them are just, there's a dramatic influence to them all, right?
Yeah, they have some kind of heart. But I love What We Do in the Shadows. I voted for it definitely for a comedy series to be nominated. It's just brilliant. And again, they just go for it so hard in that show. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
It's another stacked cast. There's no one bad on the show.
Yeah,
I agree. So Mike, what'd you think about the category?
The only one that I would probably push for is Only Murders in the Building.
That was
very good.
The production quality of the show is so good. The bit players, the cast, the other people that are in it, it's not just like a Steve Martin show or a Martin Short show. That they introduce Selena Gomez as like this person has nothing to do with these two old farts, and she's ripping one-liners just as well as anybody. I mean, it's just a really well put together show.
Two old farts again in their second or third or fourth acts in life, pushing 70s, or they are in their 70s, and they're just amazing in it. It also has, there's a connection here too. Watch this. It's about a podcast and it's about true crime, and it all blends together. It's so funny.
I watched an interview with Steve Martin, and he said he came up with this idea like 10 or 15 years ago, and there just wasn't a medium for it. Mm-hmm. And now with the explosion of all these other places and all these other things, you can get stuff approved, and they're like, all right, well, it's going to be like, I don't need 26 episodes.
Right.
And then to get to 100, to get the syndication, to make money back. Exactly. Can you give me 8, maybe 10? That's all I need.
Well, and it helps. You could say, oh, and I got, what's his name? I've got Martin Short too, by the way.
Yeah. And Martin Short's still living with me. He's in the back of the car. I can't shake him. Since we did Three Amigos, I can't shake the guy.
It's tough. I think I probably would lean towards Barry as well. I have a real love for Mrs. Maisel. It touches a lot of bases here. It's a period piece. I love that period of American comedy and America, and the Jewish experience in America. And there's some pretty heavy topics going on too. Women's rights, women out of the house, freedom of speech. There's a lot going on. And the language and dialogue is just off the charts. It's Marx Brotherian at times. I strive to be able to write like that. It is so well done. And the cast again, more people that are on their second and third acts, Kevin Pollak, for one, the guy, the monk, what's his name?
Tony Shalhoub. Give him the supporting one every year. I don't care what he does. Just give it to him anyway. Read the phone book. He's the best guy.
He's the guy. Yeah. So it's hard for me to say Barry over that. They're very different, but, both, I want them to be tied. So those are my choices. We can leave this limited series. I don't have anyone seen these things. Dope.
I haven't either. I've seen The White Lotus, but
I love The White Lotus. That was fantastic. And it's not something I don't think I would like, but I did, because it was really, I mean, that show, like if you look up cringy in the book, it was just, but it was so good. Everybody was just so good.
Is there a second season coming?
Yeah, there is. And it's going to take place in Sicily. And I think they got Michael Imperioli.
Whoa, Christopher?
Yep.
Inventing Anna, The Dropout, Pam and Tommy. I saw The Dropout and Inventing Anna and Pam and Tommy. The casting was great in all of them. The people in them were great, especially Pam and Tommy. Oh my God. It was like reliving the 90s. It was amazing. I don't know that any of them were great. I don't know. It'd be hard for me to pick one out of all of those that is the winner of them. It's a strange category. Well, why is it a limited series? Why is White Lotus is coming back? It's not limited then, is it?
Maybe they didn't know at the time.
Everybody is all up in arms about how to define some of these things because what is limited anymore? But right.
All right, we're going to talk about, this is getting into the weeds of people.
Now it gets tough.
Lead actor in a drama series. Jason Bateman, Brian Cox, Lee Jung Jae, Bob Odenkirk, Adam Scott, Jeremy Strong.
That's tough.
Jump in, kids. Pick one.
Cox or Odenkirk. When they're on the screen, you can't take your eyes off them. They're just so good. Brian Cox. Brian Cox is unbelievable. And Bob Odenkirk, he took what was kind of like a bit role, not a bit role, but a supporting role, and he turned it into his own. He's so good at Better Call Saul.
Yeah, he is really good. That's tough.
I think you could argue that Odenkirk and Adam Scott are both playing two characters and in their shows, right? Those are really tough. They're really tough. Jeremy Strong's pretty great. It's hard to take your eyes off of that guy, too.
Yeah, but you know what? There's another season coming, and Better Call Saul is going out. So for that alone, if it's going to go that way, I say give it to Odenkirk.
Well, but we're looking here at the person, the best person.
Plus, the guy had a heart attack. God save.
That's true.
he's killing it right now. Thankfully, it didn't kill him.
He had a heart attack and missed what, 2 days of work? Yeah. I get a head cold, I'm out a month.
You know, I love Jason Bateman. I always feel that Jason Bateman's the same person in everything he does.
I don't think so in this, and I certainly don't think so in what he did, I think it was last year, The Stranger. Wow, he was
that was
not,
pretty weird.
He that was pretty not weird. Himself. But I love Jason Bateman so much, and he's so underplaying it and so tense. But again, I have to turn to what Adam Scott, he's playing two roles and both of the roles are himself, versions of himself. He's playing a man who is just so encapsulated in his own grief. And then when he's at work, he's playing who's got so many different layers going on. And I mean, that kind of subtlety is incredibly difficult, and it's a really different role for him. I love Brian Cox, but I feel like he's wearing this character like a familiar favorite coat, you know. Yeah. I don't know how outside of his I mean, at this level of talent of all of these gentlemen, you're just picking, you know, it's fine tuning. You're just sort of splitting hairs.
It is an honor to be nominated with this group of guys.
I've heard that. Right.
really, and given the number of shows that are on right now, you narrow it down to 6 people and you're on that list.
It's amazing.
That's right? What I mean.
Thousands of actors.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's it would be great if it were a little bit more diverse.
We have the guy from Korea.
Right. But anyway, yeah. Tough category.
Lead actress, Jodie Comer, Laura Linney, Melanie Linsky, Sandra Oh, Reese Witherspoon, and Zendaya. I have not seen 2 of these shows, so I can't speak into them. But
I gave up on Killing Eve, so that's out. I didn't watch Yellow Jackets, though I like Melanie Linsky. I didn't watch The Morning Show. So for me, it comes down to Laura Linney versus... I'm going Zendaya. Because she had a couple of episodes where she was just... Like that one episode where she's on the run the whole time.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I mean, what she's doing is incredible. It really is. She's just miles. I mean, I love all of these ladies. Melanie Linsky, I've been a huge fan of hers for so long. But what Zendaya is doing, her depth. I mean, the scene where she's discovered that she's using again, and she goes through so many different personalities, just like an addict does. Trying to get out of it, trying to get her pills, get out of this. So 1 minute she's screaming, the next she's like, you know, childlike, you know, trying to ingratiate herself to her mother. I mean, it was just an extraordinary
she's performance. Really, really good. In my
eyes.
And for such a young age.
Yeah.
She's just amazing how good she is.
And there's never a sense of that. Nothing wrong with Disney. Ladies and gentlemen, I love working for the Disney Corporation, but you know, there's no sense of her child actor where she's come from you know, very broad humor. There's no winking at the camera. There's no mugging for the camera.
No,
you know, she's just so natural.
There's no waiting for the laugh. You know, she's so good. I mean, she really is. She's so good.
I'm gonna give a vote to Jodie Comer in a similar way for the whole series, which I actually watched three seasons, I think. She had an interesting arc. Her character had this interesting arc of trying to figure out who she is and how she became this killing machine and trying to get away from it. And in the process, playing these different roles within each episode. I have not seen her in anything else, so I can't speak of her other acting talents, but I loved her in this. And she's, I would love to see her just do comedy. I think she seems hilarious. She could do physical comedy, rom-com stuff. I would love to see her do more. I think she's great. No, that's my choice. I didn't see Zendaya, that's why. Lead actor in a comedy series. This will be fun. Donald Glover, Bill Hader, Nicholas Hoult, Steve Martin, Martin Short, Jason Sudeikis. Jump in. Who's barking?
Ellie.
Mike, stop barking. Mike, stop that.
Mike, lead the way, Mike.
Eleanor.
John Boy.
I'm probably going to go Bill Hader or Steve Martin, one of those two. I always think Martin Short plays a little too over Martin Short. It's kind of like the same guy.
You mean he's Martin Short?
He's Martin Short. I thought that Steve Martin had a pretty good character. He basically wrote it for himself. So, yeah. How about that? I got the best role. Shocking. Bill Hader is so good. And
so good.
And you... And again, I guess comic actors, because I got to make people laugh. I have to be a really good actor to make someone laugh. When you throw the drama piece to them, they seem to eat it up. And he's just so good doing both that I'd probably go with Bill Hader. But yeah, I really don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about comedy is there is such a fine line between comedy and pathos. Like, mm-hmm. So if I could be chasing you with a knife and it could be hilarious, or I could be chasing you with a knife and it could be terrifying. So I think that's what you're getting at, Mike, when you say that comic actors are so thirsty and so ready for drama because to some comedians, comedy is drama, right? But I love Bill for sure.
And I'm married to an Italian. When the knife comes at you, it's always terrifying.
There you go.
It just is.
You know.
And you got a Sicilian neighbor, so you know.
My wife is the Turk. She's good with a knife.
Exactly. It's a tough call. I'm going to have to go with Hader. I think if it was Atlanta season 2, maybe I would have gone with... Actually, you know what? If they had Brian Tyree Henry for Atlanta, I would have gone with him because he was fantastic. Not to say that Glover was bad, but it was a weird season. It was a really weird season of Atlanta with all the little anthology stuff in between. I thought it threw up the rhythm. They were good, but I want to see the main cast because they're all so good. From Zazie Beetz to Donald Glover to Brian Tyree Henry, and I can't think of the other guy's name, the guy who plays Darius. But anyway, he's really good too. So the four of them together are fantastic. But for this, I'm going with Hader.
I would agree. I think Hader's the guy. Although I wouldn't sleep on Jason Sudeikis. He has really honed that character. That show is really good. And he's taken that maybe as far as he can to some extent, but he's really good in Tommaso.
Yeah, he was good.
And he's another great comic actor who throws the drama piece in, and he does a great job.
Yeah, I agree. All right, the lady side of this, the lead actress in a comedy series, Rachel Brosnahan, Quinta Brunson, Kelly Cuoco, Elle Fanning, Issa Rae, and Jean Smart.
I got to go with Kelly Cuoco or Jean Smart, one of those two. The flight attendant was so strange, but so good. And Jean Smart, she's just unbelievable. Again, another person who just steals every time she's on screen, she steals it.
We're about halfway through the second season, I think, and of The Flight Attendant. And she's really talented. Yeah. She is really talented. And I think she's kind of similar to Jodie Comer. She's a great comedic actress. I mean, that's what we know her for, I guess, from TV. But I think she can do a lot of different things. I think she could just be... I think she'd be great in a rom-com. Has she done one? I think she does physical comedy on The Flight Attendant. She's really funny. I agree with you. Lisa, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, not at all. This is just such a hard... This is, for some reason, this one is just really super hard. I mean, I love Issa Rae so much. I just think that Insecure, again, is not... To me, was just not really a comedy. You know, I think it was a really important show. And I think her best turns were the dramatic turns she did. So I don't know. I mean, I've only seen one episode of Abbott Elementary, but there is such a bandwagon for Quinta that I'm like, just give it to her, you know? It's a great accomplishment. Although I love Jean. I mean, I love all these ladies. Yeah. So it's a tough one for me.
And
tough call. Tough one. I didn't watch the last season of Insecure, but I really like Issa Rae on the show. Mm-hmm. I have to get back to Insecure. But and I didn't finish the Flight Attendant. I've got to go back to that. So Abbott Elementary is not bad. It's okay. I have kind of a soft spot for it because it takes place in Philadelphia.
It's Philly.
Some of the stuff's pretty funny. I think I'll go with Jean Smart. She's great. Speaking of people with like people have like a third career.
Yeah, you
know, she's been so strong. Right? Did she get it last year? Did she win for?
I want to say that she did. I feel like she won for Mare of Eastwood, but
I think she did.
I can't remember now, but I
think she did supporting actress for that. I think.
Okay.
And I will be the outlier. I'm going to go with Rachel Brosnahan. I think she delivers. She's playing a comedian in a comedy series, and she does the comic part of it.
Yeah.
Stand-up stuff is great. I mean, she is like Joan Rivers and Toadie Fields of all those women of Phyllis Diller of that era.
Yeah. Yeah. She just
channels all of that energy and playing a mom and trying to, you know, get a career going and making the right or wrong decisions. And I just think she's great. But she's won before, hasn't she? I think she's won before.
Yes.
Yeah. So I feel like that's why I wasn't in her corner. But
And for supporting, I think the woman that plays her agent in that.
Oh, she's great. I don't remember her name. She is so good.
Was she
on SNL? Susie.
She's so good.
Was she from SNL? I didn't know
she's
that.
So good.
No. I think she was from.
No, I think she was from Mad TV.
Oh, that's right. Mad TV. Yeah. It was one of those countries. Okay.
All right. We got a couple weird categories here, or the weird categories. Lead actor in a limited series or movie. Colin Firth, Andrew Garfield, Oscar Isaac, Michael Keaton, Himesh Patel, Sebastian Stan. Who wants to go first?
I only saw Michael Keaton, so I really can't offer.
Yeah, I don't think I nominated any of these. I think maybe Colin Firth was one of my nominees, but I didn't see Dope Sick or Station 11 or Pam and Tommy or Things for Marriage, and I did not enjoy Andrew Garfield as much as other people did in Under the Banner of Heaven. So kind of by default, I would have to go Colin Firth. Okay.
I pass.
Pass?
I pass. There's no passing.
I watched like two episodes of Scenes from a Marriage, and it was just too much. It was just too much. I'm like, I'm not watching this. This is just insane. And he was great. Oscar Isaac was really good. What's her name? Jessica Chastain.
Yeah.
She was really good too, but it was just too much. So he's having a moment too. He's in like everything.
Yeah,
right.
Moon
Knight. Yeah, and I like him as an actor. I think he's really really good. So I'm going to pass on this one because I really have no sense for any of these.
I really like Sebastian Stan. I remember that Pam and Tommy story really well. That was right in my wheelhouse, and he channels Tommy Lee so well, from the mannerisms, the look, the attitude, the tattoos. He just is Tommy Lee. It's great. And I think, I don't know, is she nominated too? Lily James is nominated too.
Yeah,
I think they're just, the two are just great. I mean, they just became those two people. Those biopics are always hard, right? You're trying to, you want to be that person, but you don't want to be completely that person. You want to, you know, it's always difficult. I thought he was really good.
The problem I have with that role is that I don't want to see it. I don't care. You made a biopic about people I just don't care about. You might have been great in it, but I don't care.
So that's kind of the way I am about Dope Sick and the Zendaya thing. You know, I'm not big on watching a lot of drug overdoses and usage. So those are always kind of tough for me. And so I'm a huge Michael Keaton fan. I really don't want to see the whole pharmaceutical thing and people dying because of it. That just doesn't appeal to me. But I love Michael Keaton. Lead actress in a limited series, Toni Collette. Julia Garner from Indiana, Lily James, Sarah Paulson, Margaret Qualley, and Amanda Seyfried.
This is another one where I saw Julia Garner playing a role I didn't care about, and I saw Amanda Seyfried playing a role I didn't care about. Why are you making movies about these people? Well, it's interesting. They're horrible people. Let's not make movies about them. Let's move on.
The anti-hero thing,
Let's move on.
Well, there are tons of people who want to hear about it. I mean,
they're not making movies for me. They're making movies for the masses, and I'm not.
This
the masses.
Was the year of the scam artist. Yeah, I mean, in podcasting, it's all about the scam artist, and then that translated right over into documentary film, and then it goes to scripted drama. So
I wasn't fond of Julia Garner in this, and It was hard for me to get Ozark, I think, out of my head. Right. Mm-hmm. I thought Amanda Seyfried was really good in The Dropout. And that whole...
She embodies Elizabeth Holmes. She really does.
Yeah. Yeah, she is. She is just channeling her, and I thought she was really good and a very unlikable person. And she does the unlikable thing very well. And as I said, Lily James was really good as Pamela. Ange, you have any thoughts?
The only one I watched a couple episodes of was Maid, and Margaret Qualley was great, but that was another one where I just couldn't keep going with it because I just had like impending doom the whole time. Like everything, obviously she wrote the book. She's, you know, all this. So everything kind of works out in the end, but the road to get to the point of where it all works out in the end,
it's too long.
I couldn't do it. Yeah. I'm just like, all right, I can't, but she was good. So it's the only one I watched and she was very good in it. So give it to Qualley.
There you go.
For me, it's Toni Collette all day long. She is so incredible as Kathleen Peterson in The Staircase. And it's such an important role because most people, if you know the documentary of The Staircase, you think of Michael Peterson. He's so indelible. And his wife, who he quote unquote murdered, is kind of disappeared from her own story. And so, you know, having Toni Collette bring her to life in such a sensitive, nuanced, beautiful way, she really captured her as a real woman, you know, struggling to keep her family together. And she made, you know, spoiler alert, in The Staircase, the scripted version, they show like three different theories of how she may have died. One, she may have had an accident, one, she may have been murdered, and one, an owl may have, you know, it sounds silly, but an owl may have led to her going unconscious. And she played all three of those scenarios so believably and so upsettingly to see her go through that. I mean, it was just astonishing to me to watch her, just her physical work. It was crazy. So I got to go Toni Collette.
There you go. All right.
That's fair.
No, I wish I'd seen it. I really like Toni Collette. I'm going to have to watch that now.
All right.
What was that show that I think it was HBO, Ange, about a crime? It was like a small town in the Rockies, and she's a detective.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, Unbelievable. That was it. Oh, yeah. She
that was
great.
Based on her true story. And yeah, it is an unbelievable story. Yeah.
She's great.
Yeah, she's great.
And you know what? She's British.
No, she's Australian. That's
right. How'd you ever know?
Australian.
She's like never, like, she's always an American in everything she's in. Is she American in the Staircase?
Yeah.
There you go. Point proven.
Her accent in Knives Out is just so over the top that you're like, you cannot be Australian. This is a lie. You are not Australian.
Yeah, she's great. She's great.
Any last thoughts on the Emmys in general? Lisa, you're voting for the first time. It's very exciting.
Absolutely. You know, I kind of wish there had been more diversity in some of these categories, but you know, what are you going to do?
One question I have for you, from what you submitted, did many of your picks make it through?
A few? No. Yes.
You don't have to tell us who it is.
I tried not to bandwagon on things that I hadn't seen or that, you know, it's just wonderful to be by yourself with your computer and nobody can see who you're voting for, right? So you can be completely honest about who you really appreciate. Mm-hmm.
Are you bombarded now that you must be on a list? Are you bombarded by the studios with marketing and PR stuff?
Not so much. I mean, you definitely see it in Variety. You know, you see it in some of the trades.
But not directly.
As a casting director, we all get invited to screenings. And as an Academy member, you know, we'll be invited to things. But it's not really the back in the days of Harvey Weinstein, you know, strong-arming people and threatening them if they didn't vote for
I don't even mean that. Do you, like political stuff, we all get crap in the mail voting for this person, you don't get that kind of thing.
It's or not email. Quite, no. Uh-uh.
Well, that's not actually good. Bad. That makes me feel better.
Aggressive. Yeah, I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, that's very good. That's right. All right, boys, are we refilling anything?
I told you, I filled a pint glass. I'm working on it.
Oh, come on. You're such a...
I'm actually going to have to wrap up here.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
No problem. No problem.
Oh, thank you for being on this long. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. Lisa, we have been honored to have the host of Killer Casting, a podcast like ours, trying to find his little voice in the world, right?
That's right.
And we have been lucky to have Lisa Zambetti on, who honored us with some interesting conversation about the back scenes of Hollywood, how Hollywood works a little bit on TV shows and how you get people on TV shows and how podcasts work too. So Lisa, we can't thank you enough for coming on and having a drink with us and talking some TV.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks, you guys. This has been so much fun. You're just great. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It was a pleasure to meet you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah, that was fun. Very interesting, too, about how that all works.
I learned a lot.
Yeah.
You know, we wonder how these folks get chosen to be on shows, and there's a whole process to it, and it's not as simple or easy as one might think. It's a little complicated.
You know, I was remembering when Betty White passed away, they did a story about her when she got onto the Mary Tyler Moore Show, and they said they were sitting around in the room talking about casting a Betty White-like character, and they said, why don't we just cast Betty White? Oh, I guess we could do that. Sure.
We could do that. Sure. We could do that.
I guess we could get Betty White to be Betty White. Sure. Why not? And I wonder if it's similar to that and how much experience you have where it's like the usual suspects.
Yeah.
If one particular casting agent has like a big stable of people that they're like, look, I need a person to do this. I got exactly that person. I know exactly who to do that. You know,
I thought that question. And also, You must be like Lisa, probably is pretty close with various producers that she's worked with before who know her and know her abilities and know the people she knows and her talents, so that they keep coming back to Lisa and say, hey, we need you for this production. We need your abilities for this production. Because it's got to be competitive, right? I mean, there's lots of casting directors.
I also think that for a lot of these things, it's like one day, 4 hours, we need a person, go. And you need to know, like, I have really, really established people who are off every Wednesday.
Yeah.
And they could do Law and Order for you because Broadway goes dark. And that's what they do. Like, okay, why is this person a judge? Well, because every Wednesday they shoot the judge scene and they're not on Broadway on Wednesday. So they're here. I mean, that kind of thing where you're like, I got a stable of people that if you need like one day, one scene, I got them lined up. And I think, you know, you get that casting director who has those kinds of people in their back pocket, it becomes I'm hiring them for everything. This is spectacular.
The nuance of knowing the people that you work with and their special skills, or, hey, that person actually wrote, when they were a kid, they rode a horse.
Yep.
And so we need, for a character in this movie or show, we need something that can ride a horse.
Or like you said, play hockey.
Or play hockey.
Play baseball.
Right? Those things. You know,
could actually look believably like they can bat right-handed or left-handed or throw a ball.
Sure. And I'm sure Lisa's big black book of all of her people she knows, she has all those little pieces of data on folks. Hey, that person can ride a horse. We can use that person in Westerns or whatever, right? All right, boys, I am going to refill. I know Mike's on his like massive beer there still. The stein that won't end.
It's 16 ounces of Jameson and ginger. I'm not going to chug it.
Sure you are.
I would normally chug it, but for the show, I'm going to chug it.
I am I'm pouring a bottle that came from our friend Raj Sabarwal. It is a Kalila, a independent bottling from a independent bottling company called Ingle Red. You guys can see that.
Okay.
England. And it is a 10-year-old bourbon cask, 2021, 295 bottles, 56.4, and it's Kalila, so that's all I really need to do. That's all that matters, really.
Kalila, I hate both of you. Kalila. Kalila. I hate you both.
And you drinking?
I'm sticking with a double rye.
All right, that's good. All right, we are Report, or at least I am Report, and with some Kalila, and we are going to just go around the room and talk about what we're in the middle of watching right now on television. Mike, what are you watching these days?
We are going through Stranger Things, because my children take the TV, and I'm not allowed to have the remote. And we watched Miss Marvel, the limited show where they introduced a new young character who is Pakistani. They go through the whole split of India and Pakistan, splitting up, and it introduced a whole new character who now has powers similar to Captain Marvel. So there's going to be a new series on Disney Plus that has the Marvels, and this was introducing the new young character. I think they're trying to put together a Young Avengers show, which is going to have maybe Ant-Man's daughter and maybe Tony Stark's daughter and maybe this character as all younger superheroes. And they introduced her, and she was very good. I mean, the show itself, it's a lot of backstory to get to where you need to be, but the character herself was actually pretty good. I enjoyed the show more so than Moon Knight. Moon Knight was like a trip through Egyptology, which, you know, fascinated. I'm not saying, like watching paint dry. It was like a PBS episode. Masterpiece Theater. But this was it was a little bit fun. A little long for the backstory, but a little bit fun. And it'll be interesting to see the next show where they have the Marvels, Captain Marvel, and I think a woman who was on the WandaVision, and now this person are all going to be three superheroes together in one show. So it'll be interesting to see. I feel like girl power, three women of varying ages.
Go back to Stranger Things. So where are you in the series?
Whatever drops we watch, so we're seeing the whole thing. And we're caught up with whatever the most recent thing is. And I really like Winona Ryder's character. I really like David, I can't pronounce his last name.
David Harbour.
Harbour. I don't know how you, he's really good. The younger kids, they're okay, kind of creepy. Matthew Modine is extremely creepy. I read a thing where he's horrible to the girl who plays Eleven, Millie Bobby Brown. In the show, he's horrible to her.
Yes, correct.
And they had to start every scene by saying, I love you. So that they weren't like so broken up at the end of this, like I need not just physical therapy, but emotional, mental therapy, electric shock at the end. Like, I love you. I'm only doing this because it's scripted this way. I really love you. I really love you. It's all good. I love you. Because what he does to these children as they're like lab rats is just terrifying. It really is. The show itself is the kids really enjoy it. I don't know. I'm not totally sold.
So I watched it. I'm caught up on it. My criticism of this season is only because the second half of the season has these extremely long episodes. And I found it, I was just talking about this with someone else, that, you know, your brain is sort of set for like a half hour comedy.
Yeah, 35 minutes, I got to stop.
It has a rhythm to it. You're used to the rhythm of it. And then this season, the second half, they've got these long episodes, and it's like a movie, and they're kind of endless. And the rhythm's all screwed up. There's so much going on, and it just, why couldn't they have just kind of split these up into a few more episodes and accomplish the same thing? And God, I felt like this thing is never going to end.
And the splits between what was happening in Russia and what was happening in the you know, the upside down or whatever you want to call the place.
Yeah.
And then what was happening inside the laboratory were so almost disconnected that it was like it was almost like you're watching three different shows.
It was disjointed a little bit at times. Yeah. I that was my
it was tough to tie together. I could see that certainly being criticism. But yeah, we watched a lot of that, and now I just have so much stacked in the queue now to watch. We're going to be like binging everything. We just got back from vacation. We'll just binge the hell out of the rest of the year. So until the kids get back to school. I have to watch all of Flight Attendant. I have to watch, we haven't seen much of that. We want to watch all of Ozark again, just because it's going to end, so we got to start watching it. And you know, you kind of forget so much stuff that happens, so you want to catch up. And we never watched Outlander. We're still watching and waiting to see Outlander. So we have to watch that whole series. So
there you go. You got some TV to watch.
There's a lot to watch.
Ange, what are you watching?
We talked about Better Call Saul. So I'm curious to see how this all ends. So, I mean, the dominoes are falling, you know, episode by episode. And I'm curious to see where they go for the last four. Because I think they wrapped up a lot of storylines in the last episode. Well, potentially. Or at least, you know, maybe put them on the back burner for a little bit. So they left a little bit of space to see where it all goes with Saul and everything else. So Better Call Saul.
I was going to say, I think we know, I think it's been put in enough media that Bryan Cranston and Aaron Paul show up.
You know who else is doing a cameo, right?
No, who?
Carol Burnett, apparently.
Carol Burnett. Why? Was she in Breaking Bad?
She's a huge fan of the show, and I think she got cast as she's got a bit.
Oh, wow. Good for her.
Apparently she's a big fan of the show.
Does she play a little hobo a maid that cleans up the stage at the end of the show.
I'm so glad we had this time together. Maybe that's it. They'll end the show.
Oh, that's her. That's the ending.
It was just an episode of the Cal Burnett Show.
Pulls on her ear.
Yeah. That'd be interesting. That'd be a good ending. What was I saying? What else? Let me see. Hold on. So Better Call Saul. The Old Man, there's only one episode left. I like the first couple episodes. I really am disliking the last two episodes. So I'm going in with much trepidation on the seventh. So I thought the last two were kind of draggy. So I thought it started off strong and it's gotten kind of lukewarm. So I don't know. I'm on the fence with this one.
We talked about this earlier today. I really love Jeff Bridges and I really love Lithgow. So the two of them, I would watch the show no matter what happens.
I really like it. And I know what you're talking about, both those two episodes. I still think the characters are so good. I think it's still worth sticking around with.
The dialogue has just gotten so just over the top.
It's a little heady.
You know what? As a book, because this is based on a novel,
it's
right?
It's a book, right.
Like the guy said, hey, you know what? I really like this paragraph. I'm going to leave it as is. As opposed to like altering it a little bit for a TV show.
You can't just make the book the script, right?
No, you can't.
We got to trim it down.
Yeah. So I just wonder if they really liked the thing and they kept it. And it was, I don't know. But anyway, there's one more episode. I'll see it through, I think. Something else I was watching. What was that? Better Call Saul. The Old Man. I don't know what else. Oh, what are we doing in the Shadows?
I watched episode 3 this morning. Very funny. Very funny.
Give him all the money.
And you know what? Reservation Dogs was a Taika production, and we didn't bring it up with Lisa. Did she have Taika down, maybe?
She talked about casting the first episode.
Well, I know, but it was still a Taika production, right? He was the producer.
Surprised that didn't get nominated. Back to the Emmys.
That was a great show. That was an awesome show.
And she was talking about diversity. Boy, that's kind of out of left field, diversity-wise. And it was so good. I'm a little disappointed now thinking about that. I don't know what category it would have fit in, but what category would that be in?
Right.
I'm sure it was I was sure it was submitted, but it was really good. I just finished. I know we're talking about what we're watching, but I just finished a day or two ago. I watched my daughter, also a Native American themed show called Dark Winds on, let's say, AMC. I think it's AMC, based on a Tony Hillerman book. Produced by Robert Redford and George R.R. Martin, which is the wackiest. Do you think those guys ever like get together and drink?
How do you get them in a room?
What the heck is that? And it's a Native American story, a Navajo reservation in the 1970s in New Mexico. It's a crime drama kind of thing, and really good, really good. The FBI agent, I can't think of his name, from The Americans he's an FBI agent.
I can't think of his name.
He kind of looks like an FBI agent.
And then they've got the sheriff or whatever he is from Reservation Dogs. Is the lead on the show.
Correct.
And the girl from Reservation Dogs is in this.
The
one girl.
Oh, she is. Yeah, that's right.
One of the girls, one of the young kids.
So it's all mostly Native American casting. It's very good. It's a very good. It gets a little bit, cops and robbers. You know, shoot them out kind of stuff a little bit, but in general, it's a pretty good show. I don't know what the book's about. I mean, comparatively, let's see, Better Call Saul, as you mentioned, I'm in the middle of a show. You guys won't watch this, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. It's called Intimacy on Netflix. And you watched, this Spanish show about robbing the mint money heist. The lead of this show is the woman who plays the lead cop in the very beginning, and then she becomes part of the gang.
Right. The professor's girl.
Her. She has a very interesting first name. It starts with an I.
Spanish name? Is it a Spanish name?
Spanish name, yeah. So she is on the city council of, how do you say that city in Spain? Bilbao?
Bilbao.
And she is going to be running for mayor. And a viral video of her in an intimate situation with a man on a beach, and it's not her husband. It becomes wildfire, and she is not going to give up, and she's going to try to figure out who this guy, or how this happened, and how it affects her family. And there's also another similar type thing that happened with another woman in the show. unrelated, and they sort of kind of blend together, and it's about trying to find out who has kind of done this to them and cross some lines. It's really good. It's about halfway through, I believe. Just the whole series is on Netflix. Trying to think of else what I'm watching. Physical on Apple Plus. I think the last episode is dropping today or tomorrow.
What, season two?
Season two. Very good. And you mentioned the vampire guys. We watch The Shadows.
What we do in The Shadows?
Oh, very good, Mike. Congratulations. He has finished. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike has finished his 16 ounce.
Oh.
What is that?
Widow Jane.
He's bringing out Widow Jane whiskey. That bourbon?
Yeah. That's good. That's
nice
stuff. That's very good.
I am waiting for Reservation Dogs to drop as well. We finished The Boys.
I got to go back to it. I only watched the first couple episodes.
That's another one. It's in the queue. Yeah. I can't watch that with my youngest. That's not a Marvel show.
No.
I have to admit, without giving anything away, it sort of ran its course for me. It was a little slog at the end for me, but I don't know. It's worth watching the rest. I have to think in terms of networks, you know, it's really weird. I can't think of the shows. What else have I seen? I remember last time I was thinking for something to watch last night. I started watching Loot on Apple Plus, and the first episode of Loot. Yeah, exactly. What is Loot?
What is
Adam Scott's in it, and he is a very rich guy who made a bazillion dollars in tech. And Maya Rudolph is his wife, and he throws her a big birthday party in their massive mansion in Beverly, in the hills of Hollywood, and she figures out during the party that he's been having an affair. So she divorces him and she gets half of his money. So she's worth $87 billion, literally $87 billion. And she hasn't worked in they've been married for 25 years and no kids. And so now she has to figure out what she's going to do with $87 billion and how she's going to spend her life. That's Angela's problem. And
I would like to advise her.
Yes, I know. And it's actually kind of funny because she doesn't really know how to work in the real world. And it turns out she has a foundation, a charitable foundation that she has never been in the office of.
You know what it's called? It's called the Angelo Foundation.
It should be.
No, it's the Human Fund. Is that George's fake, George's fake thing? Costanza's fake thing? The Human Fund?
She has never really been there. She has no idea what they do. It turns out they do some really great stuff with, helping the, women, and they have shelters and they do stuff for the homeless. And she has no clue really how it works, but she wants to get involved. And of course she's so out of touch with the regular person. And she just wants to spend money and bring limousines to homeless shelters. And the setup was pretty good. I don't know if I'll stick with it or not. It was odd. Lots to watch on the lots to watch. We have lots to talk about the next time we get together.
Hey, do you got static on your end?
I'm hearing something, but I don't know where that's from.
Oh, I don't hear anything. Maybe it's
me. I don't know.
I don't hear it.
Okay. Well, whatever. Anyway.
Gentlemen, we have done well again. We have crossed into a whole new world by interviewing a podcaster. That is just, we need a podcaster who has a distillery. That's our next goal. Then we're in business, right? Very meta, I guess. Very, very meta. So what we watch when we drink, another fun episode, boys. Good to get together. Good to talk some TV. Good to have a little bit of drinks together. Any last words before we say goodnight?
Nah, I'm good, man. We got a lot of TV to catch up on. We still got more to talk about. So, gentlemen, as always, it was a pleasure. And thank you again to Lisa Zambetti for joining us.
Play us out.
Take us out. I'll do the outro.
Outro. Outro.
All right, Jen.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers.
Cheers.
If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com. And if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.